Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome back to the Not So Fit Couple podcast with your host, not double hosting today, with your host Lucy Haldon. We got back from the USA, Las Vegas, late last night. Our flight was actually delayed and Ben, bless him, I can't actually say what Ben's doing yet. I think he'll probably want to tell you himself. I don't want to give too much away. Ben went off somewhere at 5 a.m., bless him, this morning. Bear in mind, I think we probably got to bed at 1 a.m.-ish, but we're so on Vegas time still. Like, it's 5:30 in the morning, Vegas time. Bear in mind, when you've kind of done an ultra as well, your body already feels a little bit out of whack. Like, it feels a little bit rogue and a little bit random. The ultra that I did was the Speed Project, and we are actually going to do a full episode on it. But me and Cal thought we wouldn't do it today because, one, I'm absolutely fucked. And two, we want to do it with Ben because Ben was also part of that experience and he can probably give it from a perspective from an outsider's view, who's someone who wasn't running, because the whole thing was wild, guys. Like, it was honestly, it was one of the most craziest, wildest, exciting races that I have ever done and probably ever will do. I think we might be doing it again next year. I think that would be super fun. I don't know if it would be with the same team. I hope it would be because everyone was just absolutely incredible. But we literally ran 300 miles from LA to Vegas and now I'm home back in the UK and it feels really weird to be home. When we were actually in Vegas, if you've ever been to Vegas, by the way, what the hell? It's a crazy place. It's actually one of the wildest places that I have ever been. I know they say New York is the city that never sleeps. No. Vegas does not. It is the craziest place. Like, all the casinos, the hotels, the vastness of that place really, really blew my mind. I probably maybe would go back one day potentially. It's not at the top of my list, but it just so happened we ran into Vegas, so I got to spend some time there. And I completely forgot what I was saying before that, but I am back and we're doing a shoot a podcast for you today. So I'm doing it on my own and we're going to go over a few questions. So Cal is going to ask me some questions that you guys have had. And then I think we're also going to touch quite heavily on High Rocks because there are so many amazing High Rocks events coming up at the moment. You've got London High Rocks, you've got Berlin, you've got Malaga. Malaga's literally next week. When does the podcast go live?
Podcast goes live on Monday. Maybe the 7th, 8th, but yeah, it's 7th, like 4 days.
Yeah, so people who are doing Malaga will have Malaga competing in High Rocks that weekend. So we thought we could touch on a few High Rocks questions for you guys as well, because obviously My Coach app is the digital partner for High Rocks. If you're not already aware, we have beginner, intermediate, advanced programs on there with three different coaches who are all absolutely incredible. All the videos, all the training, everything you need, 10 to 12 week programs, you get 85% cheaper basically with My Coach. And it's why we tried so hard for so many months to get the app in a place that we could have High Rocks on the app, meaning the way the workouts are written up, the way you can follow them, how you can do everything, how you can log everything, how you can check in. So you can get 85% cheaper. It's pretty wild, the fact that we do offer that price, but the more people we can get involved in High Rocks, the better, because I think the way they've done it is super, super clever, because you don't just have to be elite. It's not, you do have elite people in there for sure, like the Elite 15. I'd say like me and Meg are pretty elite when we do it, and Ben and things like that. But you can do it as a complete beginner and you can race with your friends, you can race with your family, you can be in that competitive environment, and they've done it really, really well. So if you hit the link below, you can get 85% cheaper High Rocks coaching with My Coach app. But without further ado, I'll pass over to Cal for the first question. It might not be High Rocks, it might be in any question.
Hello. Okay, so I sound a bit better. I was a bit quiet before. Hello, everybody.
Let's get my salts in. I feel really dehydrated.
What are you drinking? Is it Element?
I am drinking Element. Element. They're 1,000 milligrams of sodium, which is so salty.
Salty. Mm. Okay, first things loose. For anyone who's listening who doesn't know about it, what is a High Rocks? Give us a 30-second. Mm. If you had to explain it to an absolute stranger who's never heard of it before, what is High Rocks?
High Rocks is functional fitness racing. And the reason I would say racing is because you have fast running in between. Usually fast, I mean, it can get pretty spicy early on. But you're doing functional fitness exercises. For example, I'll tell you the order. You have 1,000 meter ski erg, 50 meter sled push, 50 meter sled pull, 80 meter burpee broad jumps, 1,000 meter rowing, 200 meter farmer carry, farmer's carry, 100 meter sandbag lunges, and then 75 or 100 warbles. Between each of those stations, you have a 1,000 meter run. So you have 1K run between each of those stations, and it is nonstop. So when you start and then when you finish, it's just timed. You do get individual times for each of the stations and the runs because it's logged with a little thing that you wear on your ankle, like a time chipper thing. And it is brutal. I will not lie to you. High Rock's one of the most exciting, brutal events that I compete. And I think it is so fantastic, the mixture of the running at a certain pace and really trying to push it, but then going into something like 50 meter sled push, and then you've got to go back into a run, your legs are absolutely fried. So the functionality of it is completely there. There's not bodybuilding exercises. I kind of, when people say, like, is it similar to CrossFit? You can kind of see the CrossFit element. However, there's no Olympic lifting. So you don't have cleans, you don't have clean and press, you don't have like barbell thrusters or anything like that, or all the gymnastics, there's no muscle ups. So it is much more accessible, I think, to people to be able to do High Rocks as it is. But that's basically what it is in a nutshell. The times completely vary. You've got the world records, which are like 50 minutes for doubles. I think singles, maybe you could be doing it for like 2 hours if it's like your very, very first one, or you're just stepping into it. So yeah, it's a wild ride.
Okay, so just out of interest, Luce, what would you say is the hardest station? I know probably the eighth station would be the hardest, but then so what's the hardest on the day? And then taken separately, what would be the hardest?
So I think for sure the sled push is the hardest station. Now, it's only the second station, but bear in mind you've done a run, 1,000 meter ski, and then you go into 50 meter sled push, and then you go into a run again. The sled push is heavy. I find the sleds heavy. Even women's doubles weight, I still think it's heavy. And then for worlds, we go up a weight, which I think is really rogue. I'm not sure why the weight category would change, but the weights go up massively. And when you try and run after sled push, I do find it really difficult because your legs are dead. You build into it quite well. And then sled pull, for example, if you can just use your arms more, it's not as horrendous. Lunges are also pretty spicy. That's the seventh station, because if you're thinking about it, you're lunging and going into a run. The other exercises, like the farmers and the row and the ski, they're obviously going to gas you out. Your lung capacity and like your heart rate is probably going to go up. Whereas like farmer's carry is a little bit better. That's probably the easiest station. Lunges, you're using your legs. So the seventh station, lunges, is up there, I think, for me as well, as one of the hardest stations. Warbles are hard, but because it's the last one, you're on your way out. You're on your last station. And I didn't find warbles too bad with doubles weight, which is 4 kg. Again, at Worlds, it goes up to 6. It's a little bit spicier. And this is all from a perspective of someone who's only done doubles, by the way. I've never done singles High Rocks, is where you do the whole thing by yourself. I will at some stage. But you know what? I don't have the commitment yet. I'm not committed to doing that yet. It's a bit rogue. And I do enjoy doing doubles. Like, I love, love, love doing it with Meg. And I get to do it with Ben this year as well. But yeah, definitely, I think sled push and sandbag lunges are ones to practice heavily in your training. But not just practicing it on your own, practicing it and then going into a run. So practice it on either side of a run. Always, always try and do competition weight or heavier when you're training. There's no point training with a lighter weight, especially with the sled push, because God, you'll get to competition and you have the shock of your life. But yeah, definitely the sled push and sandbag lunges.
Nice. Okay, so first question specifically from our listeners. I'd love to start High Rocks, but I don't know where to start. Do I need a gym membership? What should I be doing?
You will need a gym membership unless you have a completely rigged, kitted out home gym. And I wish I could say to people, you can do it without a gym. Do you know what? It's one of the races that you actually can't, because if you're not practicing your ergs, So you're skiing your row, your sled push, your sled pull. You could obviously do burpee broad jumps and lunges probably without a gym, but your warbles, your farmer's carry, I would say you need access to a gym. I think most gyms now do have Hyrox equipment. I think there's only like Pure Gym who doesn't really have sleds in all of them. JD are now affiliated, I think, with Hyrox. There's a lot of different gyms, which is great. Like, there's a massive movement for the gyms to have Hyrox equipment and have functional fitness equipment. I definitely think you need to follow a program. Like, even I followed a program when I first started out in Hyrox, because it's very humbling. The first time you do Hyrox, it's a hard event. Like, it's an endurance event, because you're going over an hour when you're competing, unless you're Hunter. I mean, me and Meg did 57:58. It's basically an hour. Hunter does it in 50 minutes with doubles for the world record. But it's an endurance event, so you need to be training pretty damn hard. But it's also, you're not just training in a gym. The running element of it is so important. When you think about it, you're doing 8 kilometers worth of running. So you could be on a station for two and a half minutes. You're going to be running for at least, depending on how quick you run, 4 minutes to 5.5, 6 minutes per kilometer, 8 times. You know, that's a lot of running. So it's not just the functional fitness and the gym side that you need. You need to be running 2 to 3 times a week. And this is why with the app and with my coach, the programs are so specific. Like, the workouts could not be clearer. The AMRAPs, the chippers, everything you need, the countdowns, the paces you want to be hitting. It's all very specific and how you want to get through your first Hyrox. And then once you've done one, you'll absolutely get the bug for it and you'll want to do more. And then you could go into intermediate program. You could do the advanced program, because the programs do get harder. I think as you get fitter, it's important to then push yourself more. There's no point staying on a beginner's program when you feel like you can push yourself more, especially with the runs. Like, you'll hit a stage with your running where you need to be pushing yourself into a completely different comfort zone to mimic how Hyrox is going to feel. And then I definitely say, even when you're a beginner, to do a couple of Hyrox sims before you compete. So a Hyrox sim is basically just a full run through. Loads of gyms do them, and we just end up setting them up ourselves as well in most gyms. As long as you've got the equipment, you can pretty much do it, and you don't even have to run outside necessarily. You could run a treadmill. But yeah, that's basically what you want to do.
Perfect. Okay, so we've had someone who's not done one but is really interested and says, what should I expect from competing in a Hyrox? So maybe you could take them through, like, say 24 hours around it. So like the night before, the day of, things you do, and then the afterwards.
Yeah. So what you can expect from Hyrox is everyone will be competing at different times. So you'll have a wave number. You could be competing at 8 a.m. You could be competing at 8 p.m. And this is where it's really interesting with nutrition, because no one person will be the same with their nutrition anyway. But whatever you do normally, do the same on race day. Don't suddenly change it up on race day. It's the same if you're doing any running race with all the marathons and stuff. My nutrition does not change on race day, because you don't want to have issues down there where it feels all funky. You don't want to feel sick. You don't want to have something that throws you off. You don't want to have shit tons of pre-workout that sends you into the roof. Whatever you normally do, do the same on the day of competition. So for example, for me, again, this is not the be all end all. I always have oats or a bagel with banana and honey around competing. I also have that on normal days. I have it on rest days. I have it every single day. So I would also do that on competition. However, for Manchester, me and Meg were competing at 8 a.m. and I had to get up at 6. And I don't usually eat at 6 a.m. and that threw me off a little bit. So instead of having a big bowl of oats with banana and honey, I ended up just having like a thins bagel with a whole banana with peanut butter and honey. So I was essentially having the same things. I was still having carbs. I still had the banana in there, the honey, love a bit of honey, always have it. But I wasn't having a massive bowl of oats because I knew it wouldn't sit on my stomach well. I still had a Nocco 30 minutes out or like 45 minutes out because I always do before my training sessions. Again, nothing changed. If I was competing later on in the day, I've also done that. I competed at 3 p.m. for Birmingham. I did the exact same thing. I had oats an hour and a half before. So I didn't change what I have usually before I train. I'm always comfortable having on oats if I've got enough time for it to digest. And it's kind of whatever works for you around nutrition, but you, I would say definitely get your carbs in there. If you usually have caffeine or a knocker or a pre or something, it's something that you're used to. Again, I'd have that. Like I take beta alanine. I had that on the day. So there was no changes than what I usually do. Definitely with your warming up times, give yourself enough time to warm up before you compete. So if you're competing at 8 a.m., for example, I'd definitely get in the warm up area at about 20 past 7-ish, because you have to be in the race pen, like the starting bit, this massive blow up banner thing, 4:10:02. So 10 minutes before you're competing. So half an hour to warm up, mobilizing, getting loose. And then you also want to get your heart rate up. So I usually max out some of the ergs. I'm not tiring myself out, but I'm maxing out some of the ergs to get my heart rate up, because I don't want to go straight into that pen because the adrenaline is so high, your heart rate's really high, and it completely blows me away. I already would have increased my heart rate on that warm up, which is super important. So that's your warming up. Night before, making sure you're getting a really, really good night's sleep. There's a few people who do travel up on the day, depending on where it is. I would always travel up the night before usually, because I wouldn't necessarily want to drive for like 2, 3, 4 hours on the day of competing, just because my legs stiffen up in the car, especially if I'm driving, I get really tight hips. Again, it's completely optional what you do. Like, you might not want to stay in a hotel or anything like that, but I would always try and get there the day before if it is somewhere a little bit further away. Obviously, if it is in your hometown or like 45 minutes away, it's probably not an issue. But if it's a little bit further away, I would definitely stay in a hotel the night before. I think that's basically everything. I just say definitely just like, don't stress about how I spoke to loads of people and they're really stressed for their first competition, but you just go out there and you have fun. It is such a wonderful atmosphere, and to be amongst so many people who are running around, who are all doing it together, who are all in the pain cave and they're all experiencing it, is a really, really wonderful thing to do. One thing I would say though, it is very humbling. Like, I would never go into a high. I did my first one, it shocked me. I was like, it's going to be fine. Like, it's not going to be that bad. I would never go in with that mindset again. I don't with any running races or anything. I always go in thinking, do you know what? You're going to hit a pain cave and it's going to be brutal and you're going to love it. Like, I mentally prepare myself for how I'm going to feel. Like, I'm quite a visionary. I always vision myself doing these races and these competitions. I envision myself finishing. And I've always done that with sport. And the first Hyrox that I did, I kind of didn't think it would be that bad. And when the pain hit in all the areas, it really shocked me and like threw me off a little bit of like mentally how I was feeling. Whereas I already knew after that Hyrox, all the ones I've done since, I go into it thinking, you know it's gonna feel a certain type of way. Let's get ready for it. So when it hits, it's not as overwhelming. I do it with everything. I did it with the Speed Project. I absolutely knew my legs would be absolutely burning, and they were. So when it happened, I was like, this isn't a shock. Like, you knew this was going to happen anyway. And I think mentally it puts you in a far better place than kind of pretending that it's not going to feel a certain type of way. I think it's important.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, quick one here. What should I look for in a doubles partner? I've got lots of people asking me, but I don't know who to choose.
That's a funny question. I definitely think you need someone who you can kind of give it to each other. And by that, I mean, so it depends. If you're just kind of doing it for, like, there's different people who compete at Hyrox. Let's just get this out there. You've got people who are really going to go for it, you know, like really going to go for it, who are going to be screaming on your left, move out the way. That's me. Me and Megan, through and through. Like, we take it quite seriously. Like, we go into worlds and stuff, like we proper get into it. And then there'll be people who just want to finish it, or they're doing it for maybe like charity or a bit of fun or whatever it is. So just make sure you're aligned on how you're competing in Hyrox. If one of you is just doing it for fun, but one of you wants to really, really go for it and race and be elite, that's not a match doubles partner, because you'll get really pissed off at the other person when you don't think they're giving it their all, but they actually are just doing it for fun anyway. So definitely have the same goal, have the same ethos, like why you're competing. The first thing you'd look for in a doubles partner is making sure you have the same goal in mind. Looking for someone who I guess is like similar ability, obviously can be slightly quicker or slightly slower. It doesn't, you'll never be exact. Someone will probably always be stronger, or somebody will always be a better runner. That's not a problem. But a similar ability is one of the things that I'd look for in a doubles partner. Being able to communicate well with your partner is absolutely crucial. I know me and Meg are so well suited to competing together because we're sisters, and through we know how each other are feeling. Like, Meg doesn't even need to speak, and I know how she, I mean, bit different because we are sisters, like we're very, very close. I don't even need to speak to Meg. I can dart her a look and I know exactly how she's feeling. When we're doing high rocks, especially at Manchester, when Meg literally really, really pushed hard, I spoke the whole way around, and because she couldn't speak on the runs because she was so gassed, I could speak. So I would say, okay, I will go next on this station. I will do this. I'll do 300 meters. I'll do this. I'm good to go. I will go. And she just nod and she'd go with it. So you need to know your doubles partner and how they're going to react in a situation of competing. You also need to know each other's strengths and weaknesses. I am slightly stronger, so I did a little bit more of the stations. So the skier, for example, the rowing, the sled push, the sled pull. If you can do more and you can help your partner out, do more. And if you're feeling fucked, tell your partner. You just need to have that communication with them. It's one of the most important things, especially when you are going around as well, because the track gets hella busy at High Rocks. The running track element of it is super busy. It's something you do need to be prepared for. Me and Meg kind of had a tactic that I would run slightly in front of her, literally put my arms and my elbows out, and I would shout, because I could shout when I was running, I would shout on your left or on your right, wherever we were, which means people would move out the way. They are really good, by the way, with High Rocks. You know when people are really going for it because you move out the way for people. So Meg would just go behind me so I could kind of make a little path for her. But yeah, definitely know them well, be able to communicate, be of a similar level, have a similar goal in mind of what you both want to achieve.
Smashed it. Okay. Now we're kind of moving a little bit away from High Rocks here. So I've got some other questions. I'm about to do an ultra marathon. I think this is Race of the Stones she was talking about, actually. Love. Which is interesting.
I've done that.
So what injuries can I expect afterwards? Topical question.
That is an interesting question. For one, I have no idea who you are and I don't know anything about your body. So I cannot give you an answer to that question. I also would definitely not go in with that mindset. I think that's a really pessimistic mindset to go in with, thinking, God, what injuries am I going to expect after? Expect none. Like, after Race the Stones, for me personally, so I ran 100K, my Achilles were honestly ruined. And they weren't beforehand. I've never had Achilles issues throughout the whole training block. I thought, if anything, it would be my dodgy hip that I had throughout the whole training block. My Achilles experienced something they'd never experienced. Legs were fine. My quads, hammies, glutes, calves, my legs actually, muscles felt physically fine. Back, arms, everything was groovy. My joints were so sore. You're pounding pavements for 12 plus hours, unless you're quicker than that. And yeah, I didn't expect injuries. And I think if you've looked after yourself through your prep, if you're mobilizing, if you're stretching, if you're going to the physio, if you're really, really being proactive with your rehab, the injury should not be like ridiculous. Your body will be sore. Your body will feel broken as a collective. Like, I was broken for like a month. Like, I really just mentally like clocked me out. But like, after this ultra that I've just done, I went into it with a knee injury and a back injury, and I've come out with sore big toes. Like, you can't really, I went on a run this morning. I was like, you know what? I'm actually all right. My joints are just a little bit sore. But I definitely for you, don't go in thinking, oh God, like worrying about what injuries you'll come out with. Because when you're running, you will be worried about that. And there's far more things to think about when you're doing an ultra. The pain, like when you're doing it, might be a little bit different, or random things will happen. But yeah, definitely whilst you're training for it, be so proactive with how you feel in yourself and your body, your nutrition, your recovery, your sleep. So when you do the race, and hopefully after it, there will be pain, there will be joint pain, there will be random muscle pains, but don't really expect like specific injuries, because I think that would be quite off-putting. Like, I've never gone into a race expecting specific injuries afterwards.
Nice, love it. Okay, next question. bit of a strange one. I'm going on holiday in September, and I've decided that I would like to reveal my abs. Do I need to train them? What do I need to do diet-wise? Help.
Help, indeed. So September is still a bit of time away, but what we need to understand about abs, abdominals, your core, a six-pack, however you want to call it, mostly it is genetics. And I'm very open about this. Do you know what? I could make so much fucking money off selling ad programs. You best believe I could. Do you know the reason I don't? And the reason I don't do clickbait shit on YouTube and abs in 6 days. And I'm really against it because I am a woman who has prominent abs. Like, it's very obvious. And I get asked this question maybe multiple times a day. And I never, ever, ever want to come across rude when I answer this question, but I'm probably one of the few people who will give you a truthful answer. It's mainly genetics, where you store body fat, especially on women. We actually usually, I think I am a bit of an anomaly. I've had abs since I was 4 or 5 years old. There's a picture of me with abs when I'm like 5 or 6 years old. I think it's from like just who I am. And I will never not tell people that because I think it would be snide if I just said, oh yeah, like I just train abs 5 days a week and this is how I get them, or I eat in a calorie deficit. I don't eat in a calorie deficit. I am always at maintenance or in a surplus. I eat a lot of food. I train abs maybe once a week. I do some hanging leg raises if I feel like it. Do you know what? I need to do more because my core is actually very weak. It might look strong, but it's very weak. I need to do more. And it's important for women to know that it is a little bit different when a woman does have a six pack. Usually they are an athlete, or they're very athletic, or they've done athletics and been an athlete their whole lives, and it's just genetically they don't store fat there. As women, we do store more fat on our stomachs, our hips, our lower back, and our thighs. I definitely store more of my fat on my thighs than I always have, like under your glutes as well. Like I have like that double underbutt thing. Like I just store fat on my glutes. I don't store it on my stomach. You cannot strive necessarily for that look of a six pack. You can be in a calorie deficit for sure. You can lose fat. You can reduce your body fat percentage. If that's your goal, awesome. But what you might find is, for one, you can't spot reduce. You can't target specific areas. No matter what people online tell you, they're lying. You can't do millions of crunches and hanging leg raises and think your abs are going to suddenly pop out, because it's completely based on your genetics and how your anatomy is and where your body stores fat. You might always have a little bit of fat that covers them. You can go into quite a severe deficit and you could do that for a period of time. And they might show to an extent. They will probably, I mean, me and Meg, for example, genetically, we both have a six pack and they look so different. Like mine's really weird and Meg's is quite like gorgeous. Like mine's very like blocky and Meg's is very, I don't know, like bikini aesthetic kind of thing. So you might end up reducing your body fat and then it doesn't look how you wanted it to look anyway, if that makes sense. But what I need you to be aware of is if you drop your calories too low, and it's not something that I recommend much anyway, because I'm definitely much more performance based now. I was really miserable when I was in a really, really, really deep calorie deficit. And this is when I was coming out of an eating disorder anyway, but when you do drop calories too low, it can affect multiple things for women: your hormones, your mood, your period, how you feel on a day-to-day basis, fertility issues. It can really, really get you. So I definitely just say, if you want to lose fat, that's great. If that's a goal that you have, if you want to lose weight, pop yourself into a slight calorie deficit. It doesn't need to be extreme. Do that for a period of time. Train hard. Enjoy your training. For sure, train your abs a couple of times a week, 2 or 3 times a week, to strengthen them. They might get a little bit blockier. You're going to build them. And by blockier, I mean they'll probably get bulkier. You've got to think, if you train a muscle, if you're training your glutes, your legs, you're lifting heavy, you're doing resistance training, they're growing. So when you're training your core, it will grow. It will not shrink. So you're going to get strong, blockier muscles on that area. But it is really important, obviously, to have a strong trunk and a strong core for stability, for loads of exercises to protect your lower back. Regarding the six pack, it might never happen for you, or it might. And that is just a very, very truthful answer that maybe you didn't want to hear for your holiday in September. But we don't ever want to bullshit you on this podcast. And I think it's just important for me as someone who is online with a six pack as a woman to actually be truthful with you rather than just being like, oh, we've got an abs program on the app and well, I'll take all your money and you're not going to get the abs anyway. So we'll never do that. And I think it's actually important for us to give you that answer.
Nice. Respect.
Respect.
All right. Next question. Do you ever feel the pressure to push through injuries because of the pressure placed on you by social media?
Every day. Yeah, I feel it's a really weird one for sure. I feel a lot of pressure from social media. Before the Speed Project, I don't know what happened, but I basically almost, it was like trapping a nerve in my sacrum, which is like the bone at the bottom of your back. I honestly don't know what happened. It did it on the Sunday before we flew on the Monday. I honestly can't explain the pain. Like, it was wild. So the whole week running up to the Speed Project, I was getting physio and acupuncture and all this mad stuff in LA because I couldn't walk. I was like, oh, good God. That pain did go away. But before that, I had a really weird knee issue that I know a lot of you guys saw me kind of running through that when I was in Florida. The knee, runner's knee, is a very common injury for people who run a lot. And I did feel pressure. I felt a mass amount of pressure for the Speed Project. Do you know what is different? Speed Project is a team. I was part of a team. And I tell you what, for fun fact, I was not letting my team down. So whatever was going on, unless it was really, really drastic, was important that I was okay for it. But I think as an athlete, and this is through experience, you understand the difference between a severe injury where you cannot train through it or a niggle. I've not been injured. I've had niggles. I've had niggles in my knees. I had a niggle in my back. I can prepare my body to run through niggles because my rehab is so on point. I do rehab every single day, even when I'm not injured. So when an injury or a niggle approaches me, I know exactly how to deal with it. And most of the time, I can run through. The volume will probably change. The runs will cut down. There'll be certain exercises that I can't do in the gym. But you have to understand the difference between an injury, which is pretty severe, or a little niggle that is something that will go away. Whether you need, I always go to the physio. As soon as I start to feel something that is a little bit on edge, I'll go to the physio and they can usually give me an answer. Usually I will feel a niggle in like a joint because of my quads or my hammies are so tight or my calves or my ankles, or there's something specific as to why it's happening. So I just think it's really important to be aware of that. But I'm not gonna lie to you, I think the pressure is mad with social media. I've got like London Marathon straight into Geneva Marathon in like literally a couple of weeks. Mad. I don't know how I'm going to feel for either of those. But at the moment, Black Magic's just feeling great, except my big toes. My big toes are not well.
Yeah, this is what I wanted you to bring up, Luce.
They are ill. Yeah. They are, because I've just done like, it was over 50 miles. I think we did 50 miles each. And it's fast. The Speed Project was fast. We were not chilling. We were really pounding. And my toes pounded so hard. They're just... And bear in mind, I was wearing Alpha Flies and Adi Zeros. So I was wearing racing shoes because it was a race. It was obviously an ultra. So I'd never would have ever done an ultra in a fast shoe. But because we were hitting it hard for so long, I was wearing my fast shoes and everyone's wearing their race shoes. But I've never worn the shoes, like a race shoe, for that amount of time. And my big toes are black and the toenails are just not well. Like, it's just... That's the only thing I think that's really quite sore and worries me a little bit for London, because big toe pain is real. Like, I still got a trainer the next 2 weeks for London and hopefully feel fine for it. But yeah, it's not really a muscle issue or an injury. It's just, what do you do? What do you do about your big toes? And I wish the toenails would just drop off, but they're not at that stage yet. Do you know what? I'm sure they will be by next week when we speak and I catch up with you all again. I won't have two big toenails.
All right, last question, Luce. We already had that one. Okay, last one. I feel like people are judging me when I'm in the gym because of the weights that I'm lifting that look very light. How do I stop thinking like this?
Oh my God. Nobody cares. When Kyle was actually reading that question then, I thought, I don't even clock on to what weights people are lifting in the gym. You don't someone's shoulder pressing or doing anything, I don't even look. The other day, actually, I was doing lateral raises with 3 kilograms. And I did not even think once, oh my God, people are going to be looking at me. You're there for yourself. And why would it matter anyway what weight you're lifting? Because the fact you're in the gym is great. Like, you're going there, you're doing a gym session. There could be so many different reasons, by the way, that you're lifting a certain weight. I remember taking my mum to the gym for the first time after she had a pretty bad car crash a bike accident a couple of years ago. And I was taking her in the gym and we got some of the 1 kg dumbbells and we did a whole session together and I was taking her through things and she was doing rehab and mobility on her elbow. And for not even 1 second was I thinking, God, are people going to judge because we've got 1 kg dumbbells? No, like absolutely not. I was so proud that she was in the gym and she was lifting like something. Could be doing body weight for all I care. The fact that you're just in the gym working on yourself is more than enough. Did you know only 15% of the population go to the gym? 15%. Okay, so you're part of that 15% of people who are working on themselves. Doesn't matter what weight you lift. Bear in mind, some people who are super, super, super strong, like crazy strong, will go through periods where they're lifting much, much lighter weights, where their training changes, where it's different. Me, before any race, before marathons, I've got the 1-2 kg dumbbells and just a barbell with no weight on. I'm currently squatting, I think, like 30 kg. I think someone actually commented to me the other day saying, you can't lift very heavy. And I thought, no, I really can't, you know, on squats. Like, I'm just not here for it. Like, I'm just so not offended by that. I think that's a wild thing to definitely, 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 please, please, please do not worry about that. Like, you're already working on yourself. Tick, box, your mental health, your physical health. You're in the gym. Nobody cares at the end of the day. Genuinely, people don't even care about anyone else in the gym except themselves. I don't care about anyone else in the gym except myself. Like, you're going for you anyway. You're working on yourself. Get your headphones in, get your music on, follow a program, write your weights down in my coach app, and you're good to go.
Smashed it. Okay, I think we're at the end. We've got a question asking if we can see the cats, but I think that might have to wait for another time.
Yeah, they're not going to be on the... They're not upstairs yet. They're only in the... We can add a video overlay. We'll add a video for you, but actually bring them on the podcast yet is not physically possible because they're still downstairs in the kitchen. They do not have access to the full house yet because you best believe my anxiety would be through the roof where they have access to this whole house. They are wonderful though. My mum was so amazing. My mum and dad were looking after them. They moved in whilst we were in LA and I got kitten updates, but they're so much bigger.
I know.
Munchies, Minnie's so long and Munchies so much bigger. They are the best things I've ever seen in my life.
Today's the first time I've seen them out properly.
Yeah.
Like running around.
They've really come out of their shell. They're brave and bold, are Minnie and Munch. But do you know what? I love today's episode. It was actually really interesting just doing it by myself. So fingers crossed you enjoyed it as much as I did. And stay tuned for next week's episode, which will be the Speed Project. I assume it will be very much like an interview style. I think that'd be super cool. We've done it before with a couple of other races that me and Ben have done. And you guys seem to love those episodes. See, I'm running out of saliva. You know when you run out of like enough to... I'm so dehydrated. Yeah, I hope you love this episode. We have some very exciting guests coming up in the next couple of weeks and we'll make sure we keep getting the best guests possible on for you. But to do that, please keep subscribing. Please, on Spotify, on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, whatever you listen on, you do not understand how much doing that. I know it's free for you guys. It doesn't seem like a massive thing. For us, it really, really is. So if you save on Spotify, whatever you need to do to make sure you're downloaded the podcast, it means the world to us. And hopefully you love this week's episode and we'll catch you next week. Just me. I'll catch you next week. Bye.